This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This Tennis.com podcast is brought to you by ASICS, sound mind, sound body. You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hey everyone, the second round of the French Open is wrapped up. I am Ed McGrogan here, speaking with Steve Tigner, who's out in Paris covering the tournament. You've seen his post on the site, Tennis.com, Concrete Elbow blog. Today, Steve, you wrote about both Maria Sharapova and Kim Clijsters. Clijsters really early in the morning here, back in the States, lost in three sets after holding two match points against Arantxa Rus. Really a total surprise how this match ended up going. And then later in the day, Sharapova looked like she was on her way out against a young 17-year-old French wild card. And she ends up coming back in three sets, winning the last 11 games. Caroline Garcia is the name you'll probably know in the future too. So why don't you just kind of compare how those two players played, basically.
Yeah, well, Kim was leading, but it was a little bit deceptive because Arantxa Rus was she was just missing at the beginning. She's before this match, she'd won 11 matches total as a pro in her career, and Kim was up 6-3, 5-2. It seemed like a normal day, normal early round match, but when she couldn't close it out, she almost seemed to give up. She didn't have it. Obviously, she was a little rusty. She hasn't played in a while and has been injured, and this girl played well, but there wasn't much fight from Clijsters through the third set at all. She was pretty much, she didn't do anything different to change the rhythm of the match. Whereas Sharapova, I would say this was not necessarily a case where Sharapova won by fighting through. She gave herself a chance by hanging in mentally, but this was a case of a young player who was playing really well, suddenly realizing where she was and who she was playing against in the situation, and then really playing, really just collapsing. There's no other way to just put it. But I think the most exciting and interesting thing of the day was Caroline Garcia. She's really somebody that I think, as far as a teenager, the type of game she has and the way she plays, not only do you think of her as a potential top 10 player, Andy Murray got a good look at her for a few minutes and said she's going to be number one in the world someday. But I think you look at her as an exciting type of player as well. Great forehand, great movement, not the sort of run of the mill in the WTA, so it's definitely somebody new to look for.
Yeah, while all that was wrapping up the Sharapova-Garcia match here back on ESPN2, they're doing the split screen with Nadal, his match with Pablo Andujar. Nadal coming off the five-setter, first time ever, with John Isner in the first round. And he didn't make things kind of reset the switch, go back to that conventional early round dominant performance. He had definitely kind of all match some trouble putting Andujar away, and then the third set, Andujar ends up missing on eight set points, so that this really should have gone four for sure. What did you see out of that one, and I guess what can you say about Nadal after two rounds of play?
I guess the first thing I would say is it's not maybe the most important in the long run, but Andujar played a great match. He said he had been watching how Djokovic played Nadal, obviously would, And he tried to imitate that. He played up in the court. He never seemed to be more than about 6 inches behind the baseline, often right on the baseline. He took everything early. He used his two-handed backhand to move Nadal around. Nadal was pretty much on the defensive even when he was winning points. So that was, you know, this is the sort of new model, the Djokovic model. People have seen it. This is maybe the first example that we have of a guy who's seen it and tried to implement it, couldn't quite do it. But I liked the way he fought Rafa. You sort of typically think of this other Spaniards maybe showing a little too much respect to Nadal, but Andujar did until he came to the crucial moments. He couldn't finish it. I didn't think Rafa played that badly. Everybody says that he did. Even he said he played nervously. He didn't move that well. He's not playing great. He's practicing well, but he's not playing that well in the matches. He doesn't have this usual confidence. He's hitting a little short. He has to figure out a way to get more on the offensive. But I sort of felt like Andujar played well, and Nadal did, you know, very well to beat him in straight sets.
Yeah, I thought by the end of the third, I mean, basically at the turning point, the 1-5 portion of the third set, that's when I think we pretty much saw Rafa at some of his best, certainly of the day, but, you know, it just reminded you of what we're kind of customary to seeing of him at Roland Garros. And he got those five games, and then in the tiebreaker took an early lead and ended up not having to go four, which is obviously a good deal, I think, for most top seeds. The key of the early rounds is try to just get by, you know, with as little mileage as possible. He ends up avoiding Nikolai Davidenko next round. He lost today to I can't pronounce his name, Vaich, I believe, but that's who Nadal gets next, and so we'll see where he goes from there.
The longest professional tennis match lasted 11 hours, 5 minutes, and took more than 3 days to finish. During the match, there were 980 total points played, 138 games, 2,189 strokes, and 489 backhands. And combined, the players spent over 11 hours on their feet. Just imagine how much longer they could have gone if they were wearing the ASICS Gel Resolution 3 with a Flexion Fit upper for extra stability. It's engineered to go deep into the fifth set. ASICS. Sound mind, sound body.
Sizing things up for Friday at the French is a big third rounder, which a lot of people predicted would happen as soon as they saw the brackets. Djokovic and Juan Martín Del Potro both won their first two matches. Del Potro seeded 25. That's why this match between two guys that are really traditionally highly ranked is going to happen so early. Pete Botta just wrote his preview. It's on the site. Check that out. But, Steve, let's get your take. I know you're going to be there tomorrow watching it. What do you think about this match going in?
Well, Djokovic has never lost to Del Potro. He's never really been troubled by him. I remember a few years ago when Del Potro was first coming up and people thought this was going to be a really good match. Djokovic just really just crushed him. But I'm not sure why that's been such a good matchup for Djokovic. Del Potro he's looked good. He won his last match. He sort of made it, you know, he was very solid. He made a comeback in the third set after being down a break. So there's always the, you know, he will challenge him. There is that he can hit with him. He can probably even out hit him on certain days. But Del Potro obviously lacks the match toughness and confidence of Del Potro does of Djokovic right now. And he's also, maybe there's a little bit of fitness issue. He hasn't played a tournament in a couple weeks. He looked a little winded at times in his last match, though. That's sort of typically the way he looks before he kills you. I just think, you know, Djokovic has kept proving us wrong in that this streak is going to end, and I don't think just the fact that he has the good matchup in the past against Del Potro, I think Djokovic will win again. He just doesn't have any feeling of losing for a long time. Even in the last match against Enescu, right when he needed a break, he hadn't had one in the first set. Right when he needed one to win the set, he got one.
Yeah, it does seem like there's a lot stacked against anybody who's playing Djokovic, of course, at this point. So there's that, and then that's the last match on Chatrier. And we were looking at the schedule just now. On Long On tomorrow, we're going to see both Karen Wozniacki and Roger Federer on that court. Federer, this is the second match in a row he's played there. And I'm thinking about this. I haven't been over to Roland Garros, but it's kind of inconceivable for me to think of like the USTA putting Federer on Armstrong, for example. He did a couple of years ago because there was a huge weather issue or something. But under normal circumstances, it seems pretty far-fetched. But now he's on there twice, Wozniacki on there. She was supposed to be on there earlier. Is there any comparison between these secondary show courts of these majors?
Well, yeah, Chatrier and Ash and Long Lawn and Armstrong are fairly comparable. Long Lawn is a bigger stadium. Feels like more of a stadium. Nadal played there. Nadal and Federer typically play there once a year, where you just don't see those guys out in Armstrong very often. I've seen Nadal and Federer each out in Armstrong once, and that was like 4 or 5 years ago. But one thing is that the French sell these tickets completely separately, whereas if you have a ticket in Ash, you can go into Armstrong. It's sold differently here. As people who don't have an expensive ticket for Chatrier, I think the French Open wants to give people outside of who don't buy the expensive Chatrier ticket a chance to see these guys once, and that's one reason they put them on Lang Lang, because if you have a ticket for Chatrier, you can't go into Lang Lang. If you have a ticket for Lang Lang, you can't go into Chatrier. So I think that's one thing. But yeah, it's very unusual to have Federer out there twice. One of the reasons is there's they always put the French players in at least one French male and one French woman in the big stadium tomorrow. Bartoli and Songa are in there. Wozniacki, she started out, she probably should feel lucky she's in Langland. She started out in the further court one, the third court, which is the equivalent of the U.S. Open's grandstand. If you can imagine the number one woman in the world starting in the grandstand, that's where Wozniacki was scheduled to start. So the French do it their own way. They also, it's just the tickets are sold differently. There's not as much freedom for the fans. So I think they spread out these players a little more.
The French certainly do it their own way. I think that's a good way to put it. End this podcast here. We apologize if there's been any technical glitches. We had some, transatlantic travel, of course, going on here. So I'm Ed McGrogan. We'll talk again with Steve Tignor later in the week. And once again, thanks for listening. Come to tennis.com.
You've been enjoying Tennis.com's weekly podcast. Thanks for listening. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.